Oh my God, this is such exciting news. We're coming out with the start of a Sell or Die network, and it's a podcast network, like-minded people, business-oriented people, creative, compelling podcasts that are going to help you learn more and earn more.
And so if you have a podcast, or you're thinking about a podcast, or you want a podcast, we can help you. The podcast network will broadcast your podcast and others all over the world. All you have to do is email sell or die at gitomer.com, and we will get back to you in a heartbeat.
It has real estate, it has tourism, and it has cocaine, and I've been successful in two of those. So the cocaine one was not the one that I was involved in.
Okay, just checking.
That's
thanks.
A pleasure.
I don't know if you heard what I said there, but you know.
I didn't hear if you said cane, like sugar or cocaine, and now I get it.
Okay, no, it's cocaine.
Where do we start this? An answer doesn't matter. We're having a good time. Right.
He couldn't wait to get in here.
You need sales balls to make sales calls. I'm tweeting that puppy. Okay. This is Sell or Die, the only sales podcast on the planet that isn't afraid to say you're either selling or you're dying. Because there's no second place in sales. Win or go hungry. I'm Jeffrey Gitomer, author of The Little Red Book of Selling.
And I'm Jen Glackow, founder of Sales in a New York Minute. And today, we are going to help you sell like hell.
Oh, yeah.
We've got a great guest coming up. But first, we want to introduce you to the one, the only, our man behind the curtain, behind the glass wall.
Wait, it's a glass window.
What? You know, it's a metaphor here. It's okay. Our amazing producer, Mr. Doug Branson. Hey, Doug.
Hello, Jeffrey. Hello, Jennifer. I want to remind everyone they can subscribe to this podcast and share it with their friends on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Overcast, wherever you get your podcast. Just search Sell or Die and make sure to leave us a review. We always love getting feedback from the diehards out there.
Five stars or nothing.
That's
Doug
right.
Doug sounds amazing on the mic.
We're the Uber of podcasts. We want a five-star rating.
Except we don't rate you. You only rate us. And don't forget to join us for Motivation Mondays, our live sales meeting on Facebook.com/Jeffrey Gitomer. We put on the podcast feed as well. But if you join us live on Facebook, you get to see us, interact with us, engage with us, ask us questions, or just say hello.
Okie dokie. Let's get to the rest of the show. It's time to sell or die.
Rob Schell, spelled K-A-L-L, by the way, is a Swedish-American serial entrepreneur with three successful companies in 10 years. His latest startup, CN, is based in Miami, Florida, with a product development and operations center in Barcelona, Spain. CN is a new sales productivity app geared towards B2B sales teams that gives sales leaders an immediate edge by using the power of AI to increase the overall productivity of their team. Please help me welcome Rob.
Hey, Rob. I'm assuming that people know AI means artificial intelligence. And when you say serial entrepreneur, that has nothing to do with like Honey Nut Cheerios that you...
or serial killer for that matter.
Exactly.
Right, right, right.
No. But the important part is people have to understand that you're a person of depth and a person of understanding, and that's how you got to CN. Is that correct?
Yes. CN is means 100 in Spanish, and we created CN to do something that was 100 times better than anything we've done before. I've been an entrepreneur in the SaaS business for the last 17, 18 years. As you just mentioned, had some success, and but always been struggling with the concept of sales productivity and what really drives that. And that was the purpose of creating CN.
So,
wait a second. Did you start your businesses in Sweden, or did you start them when you emigrated?
No. I came to the U.S. as a college student, and I found love, and I decided to stay.
You fell in love with America or with an American girl?
Both. and you know, been based out of Miami, but done business all over the U.S. over the last 20 years. This time around, as you just mentioned, we are actually spending a lot of time also in Europe. We have an R&D center here in Barcelona, and that's where I'm at today. when I'm calling into your show. But I think that what we found as we were scaling up these businesses that, and my background is not necessarily in sales originally. I'm an engineer by trade, and I struggled in the beginning to understand what really drove sales and how to scale up sales teams. But now I've done it a few times, and I wanted to apply the power of artificial intelligence to make that process better.
When you say you struggled with understanding sales, what did you learn from those struggles?
That sales is a very, very complex thing, that it's not just one. Like a lot of times when you talk to sales leaders, if you just do this thing, you'll get better results. But that's not really the case. Sales only works on all of the kind of cogs in your machine ticks at the same time, so to speak.
I totally agree with that. Yeah, it's not it's not just the way you close the sale. It's the way you do all the things that lead to the close.
Right. And that's very complex. And when you have a huge complexity problem and you start getting data that you can analyze, that's when artificial intelligence can really start helping you.
Cool. And I want to talk a lot about your app and CN, but tell us about the first two businesses. Were those businesses that you sold?
Yeah. So I, as we just talked about, spent most of my time in Miami. Miami has three main industries. It has real estate, it has tourism, and it has cocaine. And I've been successful in two of those. So the cocaine one was not the one that I was involved in.
Okay, just checking.
That's
thanks.
A pleasure.
I don't know if you heard what I said there, but you know.
I didn't hear no. If you said cane, like sugar or no. Cocaine, and now I
no.
Get it.
Okay, no, it's cocaine.
yeah, it's true.
So the first business was a real estate technology company, and we ended up coming up with a concept that we could connect all the MLS systems in the country, and then we could power some really large websites like Remax.com, which was at the time the second largest website in the country. The second company we did was that we wanted to combine the knowledge we had developed around real estate with our passion for travel. So we created a vacation rental platform, and it grew also to very large. It's doing right now over $1 billion a year in monthly or in annual bookings, and we were able to do partnerships with companies like Airbnb, Booking.com, and Expedia. So those were type of companies that we built before, and that they are what I would call regular SaaS companies. You're trying to automate workflows. You're trying to make something happen automatically. Someone puts in some data here and it kind of goes out to Airbnb, or it synchronizes with something else. What we're doing this time around is a different concept. It's an AI first company. And that just means something different. What's different with an AI first company is that it's trying to help you make better decisions. It adds as an additional mentor or as a super senior executive that you normally do not have access to that can help you really move the needle for your business.
So what made you want to make the switch from a SaaS company to an AI first company?
Well, I was, as we just talked about, successful in SaaS because I found untapped potentials in real estate and travel. Those potentials those opportunities are gone today. The opportunity for AI is immense. There was an article that came out, or a research report, I should say, from IDC Research, which is one of the most respected things, that put the value of adding AI to CRM at over $1 trillion in economic value, because there's so much untapped potential in this stuff that can be harnessed. And I much rather be on the forefront on the next wave as opposed to trying to milk the last of the previous wave.
I concur. Cool.
Jeffrey, what's that in your coffee cup?
What do you think it is, Jen? It's Death Wish coffee. It's the only coffee I drink. Death Wish is the world's strongest coffee, and the world's strongest salesperson needs the world's strongest coffee.
Jeffrey and I drink it, and diehards, you need to be drinking it too. It'll help you wake up and smell the order forms. They have 100% no bullshit money back guarantee. So go get your first bag or first box of K-Cups of the world's strongest coffee at deathwishcoffee.com.
So what does an order form smell like?
So tell us a little bit about how the program or how the app works.
Okay. So we didn't start by just coding a bunch of stuff. I actually scaled several sales teams over the last 5-10 years. One we scaled from 2 people to 100 people, for example, over a period of 2-3 years. And while we're obviously sold a lot more at the end of that scale process, the productivity per salesperson per hour, however you measure it, went down during that entire process. And I was wondering, why was that? And I knew the 2 salespeople that I had originally. I'd handpicked those 2 guys, right? And they were extremely knowledgeable about the industry and the product. And they were, their work ethic were impeccable. And they had access to me and the rest of the product development team 24/7, so to speak. We were just a small team and we were super productive. The difference between that and when we had 100 people were obviously that that was not replicable. And that made me start thinking that there are attributes that, that are inherent in all of this stuff that we're not measuring today. We're not measuring it in Salesforce. We're not really, it's all sitting in the sales leader's gut. And I think that with AI, you can start measuring that.
So what are some of those attributes?
Yeah. So we really look at it from 3 distinct angles. The first one is your lead and pipeline quality. So are you getting good leads or you're getting bad leads? We all know that leads are not creating equal, and there's a lot of details on that. I'll get into that in a second. 2, do you have good reps or you have bad reps? And again, there's a lot of attributes there that comes into play. And the third thing is the macro factors. What's your competitors doing? How's your seasonality patterns and so forth? And again, there are a lot of things there we can measure. So I can go into a little bit more detail on it if you're interested.
Of course we're interested. Okay. We're leaning forward. I'm almost touching the mic. I'm so interested.
Great. So let's talk about leads, right? A lot of times today, people just distribute leads on a round-robin basis or through territories and so forth, right? But what happens is that some of those leads have a really good fit. Those are the things like, you know, industry that they are located in, geographic location, size of the business and so forth, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they really can't, like, for your product, there's a good fit and there's a bad fit, right? And there's really not much you can do about it. The other dimension is interest. A cold lead, by definition, has not expressed a lot of interest yet. And you, for your selling efforts, can probably bring it up a little bit if you have a good value proposition and so forth. Of course, a warm lead, an inbound lead that comes through a friend referral or through an inbound web form or something like that, has a much higher level of interest. And that affects the overall quality of the lead. So that's the lead aspect of it. But equally important is the people factors. And there we just talked about things like product knowledge. Of course, it's better when you're selling if you're knowledgeable about a product and industry. Of course, it's better if you have great work ethic and are doing a lot of things. And of course, it's better if you have great closing ability and be able to translate a great conversation into a closed deal. So, and we also measure even more intangible things like team mood, for example, where we are saying that the overall team mood in your organization will affect your role or outcome. And then the third thing, the macro factors, are things like seasonality and competition. And there, for example, I came here to Barcelona and I was running a division and we were doing great in May, June, July, and then August came and we basically sold 0 that month. And there was a seasonality pattern that I had not expected because I came from the U.S. And
doesn't everyone take off in Europe in August?
Well, yeah, especially
in Barcelona. They're like at the beach.
No, in Barcelona, they take off every day.
They're at the beach.
As a European, I should have been able to anticipate that. But in our business plan, we had not put that in. And that's the type of stuff that they... So when you have all 3 of these things, you have the lead factors, you have the... people factors, and you have the macro factors. When you understand the true effect of all 3 of those, and they're not always the same for each company, so we are creating unique models for each company, then you can start understanding where your low-hanging fruit is, what you really need to address. Because in some companies, that may be on the people side. Some companies, it might be on the lead and the pipeline side.
Hmm. And so do you... you look at a lead and then you look at the rep and you see how good the fit is artificially?
Well, right. It's not so much. It basically comes down to this. If you're sending a lot of great leads to bad reps, you're throwing away.
Yeah. Yeah. Because the rep's going to say it was a bad lead.
Yeah. But both of those things can be measured. So we're measuring the quality of your reps on these multiple dimensions, and we have a lot of different ways to do that. We're doing the same thing on the lead side, and then we make sure that what – here's a simple example. We have two reps. You have Bob and Sue. So Bob sold for 100,000 last quarter. Sue sold for 80,000 last quarter. So the old way of looking at it is, oh, Bob is a better rep. But when you dig into it and you start measuring these things and look at the leads, and because today you always have like a multi-stage process in your sales organization. You have inbound leads generated by marketing, and you many times have also SDRs doing prospecting and so forth. So Bob received $50,000 worth of leads and opportunities, and Sue only received $20,000. So the difference between them were that Sue actually delivered a lot more value with her time in the quarter. And if you can just even out the distribution, so she gets more or less the same, the overall productivity of your sales team will increase significantly. And that's the whole beauty of improving sales productivity. You're not even investing more. You're just getting more out of it. So it's the ultimate free lunch, if you will.
So basically, I have an 8-hour day, and I need to be, if I can talk to two more people in that 8-hour day than I normally would, and that's assuming the leads are there, correct?
Right. Well, what you're talking about is what I call work ethic. How effective are you in attempting to have conversations and so forth, right? So that's one thing. And people do that stuff. They do a lot of activity management, but they do it in a very when they do it in a spreadsheet, they do it in a very simplistic way. They just count the number of calls, and it's very easy to game those types of systems. So what we're doing when we're using AI is that we're actually analyzing what's going on in those calls and looking at whether there was an engagement that happened, whether that engagement moved the deal forward or not, et cetera, et cetera. So we're taking, you know, a much richer data set than you normally do. And then we're applying the predictive abilities of AI to that. And then we can say, well, this was meaningful activity versus this was just spinning the wheels activity, right?
Hmm. It's so interesting because like 10 years ago, no one even would have ever thought that this was possible.
And it wasn't, because 10 years ago, two of the key ingredients were missing. We did not have a lot of data about our sales processes because CRM was just about starting. And as you all know, CRM data has a lot of problems. And second of all, we did not have the massive analysis that is required for this stuff. The AI software and hardware that we're using today did not exist 10 years ago. And that's why you see these types of companies coming out now as opposed to then.
I think what's interesting about this, Rob, is that I think a lot of people think about artificial intelligence as replacing or taking away the human element. But from what I understand listening to you, it's actually measuring the human element, like engagement. So it actually emphasizes those things even more for a salesperson. Is that correct?
Absolutely, Doug. What we're trying to do is to model human behavior and help sales leaders and sales rep understand what really drives success. This comes back to my original quest of understanding what drove that sales productivity and Jeff's original question around what is it that you need to do to improve sales, right? And again, it's not just one thing that you can do. If all of these pieces, if you have great lead quality but crappy reps, I mean, you're not going to sell a lot. If you have great reps, but they are not doing anything because the pipeline is empty, obviously you're not going to have success. If you have great reps and you have great leads, but you have a macro factor, you have a new competitor giving away the product for free and you're trying to sell it for $10,000, then your macro factor is going to kill you, right? So we are able to understand all three of those things and then measure them over time and help you improve on each one of those. And the thing with sales productivity, I'm sure that many of your listeners are in the technology space selling some type of software service or some other type of high gross margin services. Every single dollar you can get from a customer from your increased sales productivity has a tremendous benefit to your business as ability to grow faster and ability to have a higher valuation for the business and fundraise and so forth.
So how do you measure the difference between a good rep and a bad rep? What are the kinds of things that you're looking for?
Right. So the typical way that people do that is by their gut feeling, right? Mm-hmm. They have a feeling that, yeah, John knows
he's
the
not,
product.
John could be doing a lot better. I wonder why he isn't.
Yeah. Well, and then you have the whole thing of which reps are just surfing based on or coaching based on, was it coasting based on the fact that they are getting all the good leads, or they're just doing renewals or something like that, mm-hmm. right? Versus which ones are the ones that are creating brand new value by applying their work ethic, having a lot of meaningful activities, not just a lot of activities, right? And then are able to, with the closing ability, to translate that. So we are getting a lot, we're doing a lot of analysis from your CRM data, from Salesforce data, for example. But the problem with Salesforce is that no one has perfect data in Salesforce. No one.
No. Right. Wait a minute. Let me write that down. Are you telling me that salespeople don't keep their CRMs up to date?
And sometimes the highest closing reps are the ones who are worst at entering in their data.
I don't think that's sometimes. I think that's pretty much every time because okay, they can get away with it.
Right.
Let me ask you a question that's self-aggrandizing. Does your software also teach them how to make the close, or does it only show you that they're not closing enough?
We show in them patterns that lead to closings.
Got it.
So that may be, we don't say, the software doesn't work like this. Now, it's not like, you know, like that Will Smith movie where he's trying to date a girl and he's telling exactly what to say and so forth. It doesn't work like that at all. But it works like, you know, you are set up to do these things and you're still lacking in these aspects. And if you just start doing a little bit more of this stuff, then you should be significantly more likely to get to the end result. And we can quantify all of those things because once you have the AI models, we can kind of provide what we call the expected value of each one of those activities and the changes.
But I'd still need to know the sales question to ask or the sales technique to use in order to be able to make it come full circle.
Sure. And most of the time, sometimes the company may be struggling with just articulating a value proposition and so forth. But in that case, typically have reps that are able to do well, because you can always look at what the best reps are doing and then what the reps that are struggling are doing. So sometimes reps are struggling because they are essentially being starved for good leads. And sometimes reps are struggling because their behavior is completely incorrect, that they don't have the right work ethic to get stuff done. And sometimes reps are struggling because they are missing a fundamental attributes like their closing ability.
I want to take it one step further. Could it be that they don't believe in the product enough, that they don't believe in the value of it enough?
Yeah. And so that's a great question. And that translates into this even more abstract thing that we are measuring, which we are doing through continuous surveying of our reps. So we never ask, we call it team mood, but we're not asking how you're feeling today, because if you had a fight with your girlfriend in the morning, then probably you don't feel that great. But what we're asking is, how do you feel about the training you received in the last 30 days? That's a very concrete question. And and then we ask that once a month. And then either the training was good or it wasn't. And we can measure over time how much better it is. Another question is, how do you feel about the product feature set that we're selling today? And if that has, for example, a new version of the product has gone out and there's been issues, we've all seen that happen. You do a product launch and it doesn't go as well as you hope, then you would be able to measure that. And you can see what the impact of those types of things have on their ability to sell. So things that used to be in your gut is now quantified, and we build it into the artificial intelligence model so they actually help us predict what's going to happen next.
This is Christy Walters.
And I'm Jeff Bajorek. Together, we host the Why and the Buy podcast, and we are pumped to be a part of the Sell or Die podcast network.
The Why and the Buy is a show about tackling sales and leadership challenges that salespeople and small business owners face every single day.
While we have a lot of fun doing it.
I'm a dad. I'd like to think I'm not a terrible dad, but I'm a dad, and I make bad jokes.
I love it. That's what happens when you start a podcast.
If you like making a lot of money and being super successful, then sure, I suppose.
Jeff and I have been there. We've lived through it, and we're here to share the lessons we've learned. So subscribe, rate, and review us on Apple Podcasts, Overcast, Stitcher, or wherever you get podcasts. And remember, when you know your why.
Your hows and your whats get much better. We'll talk to you again real soon.
And mic drop.
And do I see that up on my screen someplace? Where does that live?
Yeah, we have. So we deliver our product through a mobile app because we think that, you know, today's executive is the guy that has a Fitbit that checks in the morning. He checks his Fitbit to see how he slept last night, how many calories he burned and so forth. And then he wants to check the same thing about his business. What am I going to sell at the end of the month? What am I going to have to do today to kind of move the needle on my team, right? So we deliver it for a mobile app with a super simplistic interface, and maybe we can show you some screenshots.
I would love to see that. Is it a dashboard thing?
Yeah, it's a dashboard, but it's not the typical business intelligence dashboard where you have myriads of complicated graphs and things like that. It's just more of a, hey, here's what's going to happen next, and here's what you should do to make even more impact.
It's pretty interesting because you keep talking about how a lot of managers lead with their gut and on some of these things. But I wonder how many salespeople are diehards who are listening ever get asked by their managers, whether they have your app or not, you know, how do you feel about your training that you've had in the last 30 days? Or how do you feel about how our product feature set is doing? I don't think those kinds of questions are asked enough to figure out the real team mood.
Right. And the really, really hard question to ask for a manager is, what do you feel about my coaching that I'm giving you?
Yeah.
Because they don't want to hear the answer.
Right. So because we all know we could do better on those things, right? Myself included. So, but if you measure that thing continuously over time, then you can see whether you're actually making improvements when you're changing your strategy and so forth.
Yep. That's great. A little bit ago, you mentioned meaningful activities, and you also referred to these high-performing behaviors that the good salespeople do. And I want to go a little bit deeper on that because a lot of our diehards are either high performers or want to be high performers. What do you consider to be the most meaningful activities that lead to the most productive salespeople?
We have our data, and I've seen a lot of studies out, and I think that consistent activity level is super important, right? And activity level means a combination of social selling, emailing, and calling. What I see a lot of people do, for one reason or another, is that they are uncomfortable with calling, so they resort only to emailing, for example. And many times that does not yield at all the same type of results. Of course, there are also organizations that employ only cold calling, and many times they are incentivizing people based on the number of calls. And then what you probably will see is the opposite effect, where you have a lot of activity but very low engagement. People are just hanging up or not getting through, or the message does not get across, so that people that are getting on, they cannot articulate the value proposition clearly enough, and that does not work either. So a perfect scenario is where you can engage with customers on multiple channels, provide a value proposition, and that you're doing this stuff in a consistent way with customers that have with leads that have a high quality. And that means that they don't have a bad fit. They may not yet have developed the interest. A cold lead does not have an interest by definition, right? But they need to have a good fit, because if you're selling a, you know, tractor rental software and you're calling doctors are never going to buy it, right?
I'm pretty sure they're not. Correct.
That may be a bad lead.
Yeah.
Exactly. And I mean, I was using a drastic example, but sales organizations and marketing organizations many, many times struggle in getting that mix right.
A lot of times reps say that they're getting bad leads. When they're not closing the sale, they begin to blame the leads. How does your app differentiate, or how does AI allow us to differentiate between someone saying they're a bad lead and them actually being a bad lead?
That's an awesome question. And it comes to the core of what AI can do. Human brains and AI allows you to match patterns. So when you see a pattern of a consistently successful lead, and then you see another lead that has the same patterns, that could be same industries, could be same locations, could be, you know, a lot of the attributes that we're measuring, right? Then we know it's a good lead. If it breaks that pattern and has another pattern where you have never been successful, then we know it's a bad lead, right?
Hmm. So it's just based, it's based on lots and lots and lots of data.
Yes. So typically what we're doing, when we're connecting with a new customer, is that we're taking at least 2 years of their past history. And the first thing we do, as we alluded to it before, is the fact that we are never taking the data that's in your Salesforce at face value, because it is always problematic. So we have a system that, like, our first layer in our artificial intelligence engine is all about standardizing and cleaning up that data. We understand that there are missing updates in there. We understand that there are untimely updates in there. We understand that there is inconsistency in how people have entered in certain things. We know that there is missing information. And we are applying rules to compensate for all of that stuff. And then we can start doing this type of analysis.
And tell me, if you come to me and say, Jeffrey, we're going to install our stuff in your software, we're going to make it compatible with your CRM, how long do you think it would take for your solution to be implemented to where a sales guy goes, wow, this is unbelievable. I just made 3 new sales this month.
Our goal is to always have our first productivity assessment meeting that tells you what where your current state is within 3-4 days of our connection. Wow. And then I have a 30-day follow-up where you have already taken a couple of steps based on the recommendations from the software, and see some type of movement in your sales productivity, because that's the only reason for our being, to move the needle on your sales productivity. And the thing is that we can measure that to a very, very granular degree. And then, of course, there are a myriad of effects that affect sales productivity. For example, if you're hiring a lot of new reps, those reps, you all know, are going to be much less productive than your most senior reps. But then we can help you ramp those up so that they can get much, much, much quicker up, and we can take that into account, and a bunch of factors like that.
And so the person who's not picking the phone up enough, will your software detect that?
Sure, because one of the things that we're looking at is the time between a lead coming into the system and when people start engaging with it. And we know that, you know, especially on hot inbound leads, that is an extremely important metric to do. Because if you're not engaging with those leads very quickly, the high interest level that they expressed, you know, the day they connected goes down very, very quickly. So these interest things are they can go up by articulating a great value proposition, and they can come down by, you know, negligence, basically.
We talked about salesperson reluctance to enter data into a CRM, and it seems like if they know it's being tracked and now actually used to potentially help them, they might be more open to adding that data, especially if it's going to be used potentially against them if they haven't entered that data.
Right.
I'm going to tell you right now that there's been a reluctance to enter data into a CRM since CRM became CRM. Since Siebel or since Act or since Goldmine, there's always been the salesperson's reluctance because they feel like they're vulnerable to the company. The company's going to take my stuff. Why am I doing this? I don't need this. I just take notes when I'm there. This is never what I've been done. It's a waste of my time. every excuse on the planet not to enter into a CRM.
Right. Because CRM has up till now primarily been a management tool to help you understand what's going on.
And to make sure if you leave, did you leave your records?
Your data's there.
Yeah.
Right.
And again, Jennifer's point is correct. Like, for the first time, you have an incentive for a salesperson to actually put in complete data. A, because it's measured and you may be dinged for not doing a good job, right? And the second thing is that with that data, you can make better decisions. And of course, the company can make better decisions. And we can help you become a better salesperson. Because if you don't really understand what you're doing wrong right now, and how your behavior is different from the best performers in the company, how can you expect to be better? I mean, you know, we all know that the only way you can really get great at something is by continuously be challenged with a little bit more difficult assignment and getting feedback on what you're doing wrong. So that's the type of stuff that we can help you provide.
So I'm a sales leader and I don't have your tool and I can't afford AI right now. What can I do without an app?
Well, you can start looking at these things. You can make your own. Like right now, you have probably what I call the sales activity system of record. That's your CRM system. So you know what activities have happened. But what you want to create is a sales productivity system of record where you start measuring these things. And you can do it just on a piece of paper if you want to, where you start looking at, which of the reps know the product the best and the industry the best? Which of the reps do I think have the greatest work ethic? Which of the reps have the closing ability? Like looking at the late stage deals, are they closing them or are they falling through the sidelines, right? And then when you have that piece, and then you can say also, do I have factors that are really affecting my ability to sell that are outside factors, what I called macro before. So has there been a change in my competitive landscape? Or has there been some type of thing where we always know that we're selling a lot more in October and we're never able to sell in August or whatever, right? So that you're taking those into account, and then you can, if you want, you can create a super simple spreadsheet and map these things in. And at least then you can, at least for yourself, start understanding which pieces here have an impact. What is this thing? The thing that using AI, when you're selling, if you're trying to improve sales productivity, you're dealing with people, and people are very expensive. And the cost of any software is usually just a small fraction of what you're spending on your people. So if you can get your people to be just a couple of percentage better, typically, at least in our case, you can get 1,000% ROI on the investment in the software. So normally, you know, your biggest expense is not any software or any system or anything like that, but just the people that sitting there that are not operating at their full potential.
Cool. So before we go, are there certain countries, because I know you sell all over the world, are there certain countries that are more accepting of artificial intelligence as it relates to sales?
I think that, you know, in the U.S., we tend to be a little bit ahead on these curves. We are based here in Europe as well. In Europe, you have a lot of legislation around privacy. There's something called GDPR, for example, that makes it a little bit more challenging to implement it. We have gone through certification process for those things here, but those are things that typically in the U.S. people are more acceptant. So we think that U.S. is our best market. And also, that's where a lot of our target companies are located.
Canada also, or just U.S.?
No, Canada is the same thing. You know, it's just that, you know, in the U.S. you have, you know, clusters like San Francisco, New York, Dallas, where you have a lot of companies that are setting up, you know, large sales organizations to sell some type of high-tech B2B service. And those are the ones that we're targeting.
Die hard. Nerds, thank you for listening to Sell or Die. If you like what you heard, make sure to subscribe and rate this podcast. Give it a star in Overcast and tell a friend.
Tell both your friends. Just don't tell your competition. You can follow me on Twitter at Gittimer and Jen at Sales in Any Minute.
Send your sales questions to sellordie@gittimer.com. We'll be back next week with Motivation Monday and another amazing guest.
Until then, I'm Jeffrey Gittimer.
And I'm Jen Gluckow.
And we're reminding you to get out there and sell or die.
Even if your ass falls off.
Sell or Diehards, attention. If you love the show, make sure you have subscribed to the show.
And if you've subscribed, make sure you rate us on iTunes and give us a star on Overcast.
And if you've done all of that, tell a friend, tell both your friends about the best sales podcast on the planet.
And if you've done all of that, well, you're a true seller diehard, and we thank you.
Thank you.
Merci beaucoup.